Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Your Mortgage Process. I'm your host, Greg Wareham. So we want to talk a little bit today about building a business plan. So we're at that time of year, getting through the holiday season, where you really start to rethink and replan for 2025. And I think a very important component of that, if you haven't already done so, is to write a business plan. Now, even if you have a business plan right now, you want to be modifying it over the course of time to adjust to the needs of your clients, your vision, your mission, and so on. But I just want to get into some basic components of a business plan as you look to plan for 2025. So let's first start by talking about what is a business plan. A business plan is a roadmap for how you're going to conduct business and what you want your business to look like. So in getting into a little bit of detail of that, the first step with this is you really have to target what kind of business plan you're going to do, and it's really relative to the business that you're in. You could do a very traditional business plan, which is super detail-oriented, or you could look at something that's more of a lean startup plan. And that's something that's going to paint some broader strokes. The lean plan is usually something more for service-oriented industry, as opposed to a more traditional plan that's kind of more hard, concrete, non-service or production-oriented services. So let's just get into a couple of differences between the two and talk through them. So when you look at a traditional business plan, the first step that you want to start with is your executive summary. So you're going to briefly tell everybody what your company is and why it's going to be successful. Now, if you're looking for some sort of investor to come into your company, this is a really critical part. So you need to define what your company is, why it will be successful, and then also what your mission statement is. What are you trying to accomplish? And these are important headers and hallmarks, a better word for it, as to how you want things to look longer term. And what's that central core messaging that you're going to run your organization about or around? Next step is a company description. You know, use your company description to provide a detailed information about your company. And you want to go into detail about the problems your business solves. And you want to be specific to include listing out the consumers, organizations, and businesses your company plans to serve. So you want to, and you want to have that. This isn't something where you sit down and you do it in 5 minutes, right? You really need to think through that, right? What problem are you solving in the industry that you're going after? And how are you going to solution it? And what's the detail around that? Another attribute of a traditional plan is what's the market analysis. So you may have the best idea in the world in your head. And Lord knows I've had plenty of those, you know, best idea in the world, but it's in my head, but it didn't necessarily translate into something that the market needed. So as you're going to put together that business plan, you really want to do the market analysis to ensure the fact that A, there's a need for your product, who that product is serving, and then what's their need for that product in more detail. And I said the word need a few times because that's very important. Just because you think something is needed, you need to do the research to make sure the market thinks that that product or service is needed. Next step of the process is you want organization and management. Like, who's going to run the company? What's your officers look like? You know, who's the president? Who's the vice president? Is it a one-person show? And if it's going to start out as a one-person show, which a lot of companies do, what's your segue plan over the course of time to start to delegate some of that power? If you lack the ability to leverage other people, leverage isn't a bad word there, but you have to be able to rely on other people to really be able to execute on a bigger business plan longer term. Listen, we have a tendency to keep a lot of things close to our vest, especially when it's your business and it's your company, and you want to control every aspect of that. But I got news for you. That's not scalable over a long period of time. If you want to be a one-person show, you can do that. Just realize that there's going to be limits associated with what you can accomplish. If you want to grow something exponentially, you want to plan ahead of time as to who you're going to need in place and what specifically that they're going to do. I think One thing that's really important with a service or product line, which is obviously a critical part of a business plan, is describing what you sell or what service you offer. So explain how it benefits your consumers and what the product life cycle looks like. Share your plans for intellectual property, copyright and patent where needed, and again, do your research and your development. You gotta do the R&D on everything that you're doing before you're gonna put any type of significant investment into a traditional business plan. Next steps, funding request. As I had indicated before, if you're gonna speak to trying to get investors, well, know the type of investors that may be interested in your products and services. I mean, one of the beautiful things about today's day and age, there's a lot of money out there and there's a lot of venture capitalists out there that are willing to invest in a well-thought-out, well-organized, well-planned idea that has a massive need in the marketplace. Develop your financial projections. So my best advice to you in developing financial projections is you want to look at short and long term. You know, what does this look like in the first 6 months, the first 12 months, the first 18 months, 24 months? And you really want to do a micro deep dive on those first couple of years and define things in shorter increments of time. Once your company is established, maybe you're looking at semi-annual goals, you're looking at annual goals or quarterly goals. But short term, you really want to revisit this on a frequent time frame to ensure the fact that you're hitting on the objectives that you had put before yourself and before your investors. So as we kind of look at all of that from a traditional business plan standpoint, a couple of things hopefully really stood out to you. You have a very clear, defined mission and vision as to what you're trying to accomplish. Make sure that you understand the needs for what your product and service is, and more importantly, breaking down those needs by demographic, right? Are you serving an area for people over 65? Are you serving an area for people under 25? Are you geared towards men, women, gender specific? I mean, what exactly are you, who exactly are you going after and who is your target audience, and know the need for that. If you look for financial funding, you better be super prepared with your financial projections and the detail around how you're going to get there, and make sure you're revisiting what your objectives are in short time increments as you build and grow something. So that was an example of a more traditional business plan. Now let's take a look at a lean startup type of format. And I think a lot of our listeners are probably going to lean more towards this because we have a lot of listeners that are mortgage people or they're real estate agents, and we're more service-oriented business, and this kind of suits our needs a little bit more than, you know, developing product and services. So as you put everything together, there's different ways to develop a lean startup format. You know, you can search the web to find some free templates to build the business, or you can look at a lot of different areas to keep you organized. And especially if you're in a sales profession, you want to make sure that you have something tangible in front of you that you can work through that's organized for you. I have news for salespeople out there. Not all salespeople are extremely organized. So you want to make sure, if you don't have that natural bent to be extremely organized, that you're at least working through something that works. And you can certainly Google search that. You can go to Small Business Administration, or there's countless amounts of companies that provide a free template to you. So here's 9 basic things that you want to look at. First, you want to establish some key partnerships. So note other business or services that you work with to run your business. And you want to think about that in detail. Use real estate agents for a moment, and then switch to loan officers. So if you're a real estate agent, who are the people that you're going to be looking to partner with? Well, one's obviously going to be loan officers. It's going to be attorneys. It's going to be title companies. It's going to be home inspectors. It's going to be structural engineers. It's going to be people that are in that sphere of real estate and helping you, A, facilitate a process, but B, hopefully providing some reciprocal business back and forth. On the loan officer end of it, your number one is generally going to be real estate agents that you want to partner with. But you're also going to want to consider partnering with builders, with financial planners, with accountants, and other professional service-oriented people. And it's not enough to just think this. You need to write it, and you need to define what those business pillars are. So again, really quick for loan officers, let's go with four quick business pillars. Number one is real estate agent. Number two, financial planner. Number three, could be an accountant. Number four, could be your personal sphere of influence in other networking groups that you're associated with. And that's just an example of a quick four, but you want to be detailed of it, and you want to have it down in writing. In addition to that, you want to understand what are those key activities that you need to do in order to be successful. And let's look at those four pillars that I just went through, and I'm going to lean on real estate agents. Okay, well, if you're a loan officer in the mortgage space, you want to do mortgage business, and you're working with real estate agents, what are the key activities that you need to do? I would say the first one that you need to do is you need to develop the relationships, right? You have to understand your target audience, who specifically that you're going after, how you're going to go after them, and then again, what are those activities you're going to do to build the trust for the long-term relationship. Are you someone that wants to do open houses? Are you someone that wants to public speak in front of real estate agents? Are you someone that's comfortable on the phone defining what your value proposition is? But you need to understand what it is before you go about doing it. Now, with that being said, key activities change over the course of time, right? So some people that have been in the business for a longer period of time, their key activities may be different than someone who's been in the industry for the past 3 to 5 years. Key resources. What type of resources do you need to conduct your business at a high level? So I'm going to now switch back over to real estate agents. So if you're a top producing, or if you're desiring to be a top producing real estate agent, okay, how much can you do on your own? Who are the resources or the people that you need to be associated with? One suggestion would be you probably could benefit from a transaction coordinator. Now that transaction coordinator could be someone that's on your salary or that you could bring on as a salary if you're in a position to do that, but there's countless amounts of transaction coordinators that will handle things for you on a per-file basis. I'm relatively close to a national coach that's extremely successful, multi-millionaire coach, and he was talking about open houses. And when he was first in his first year in the industry, he had done 100 transactions. And he learned very quickly that in order to expand past 100 transactions, he had to give up something. For him, what he gave up were open houses. He found as though it was the least dollar-producing activity for him, so he figured out a way to leverage it out. Again, you have to have the key resources to be able to refer that over. Maybe it's somebody in your office that can assist you with that. Maybe it's you're bringing on a buyer's agent. There's countless amounts of ways to do it. The key is you need to recognize it, plan for it, and implement it. So what is your value proposition? No matter what type of service-oriented industry that you're involved in, you kind of have a value proposition. What are you bringing to the table that's different and unique from everybody else that's pitching the same product? So if you're a real estate agent, you really need to think about that in detail. If you're a loan officer, same holds true. I'm going to pick on the loan officer end of it for a moment. So if you're a loan officer that's trying to drive more business within the real estate community, why would the real estate agent work with you? What makes you different? What have you done? What's your elevator pitch? What's your value proposition? What is your initial benefit statement to get a hook in to have somebody listen to you? And when you do it, when you do that, what makes you different? I got news for you. Everybody's got competitive interest rates. So if that's what you're leading with, that's a bad plan. I have more news for you. Everyone picks up their phone and provides a high level of service, I would imagine. If they don't, then they shouldn't even be in the industry. That's great. What's your service look like as compared to the next person? And are you prepared to define what that process flow looks like? I take the call, goes to my assistant. Here's how my assistant's involved. Here's how my team's involved. And you really have that broken down in a fashion that you can articulate it to someone in detail to make them feel more comfortable with you versus someone that you're competing with. Consumer segments. Now, this is important for mortgage people, real estate people, and really any type of service-oriented business. But you need to know who you're going after. The expression is, what's that old expression? You know, jack of many, master of none. Jack of all trades, master of none, I think it is. Maybe I'm dating myself. But that really holds true. If you're going after a specific business segment in any business plan, you want to know who that segment is. Are you an expert with first-time home buyers? Are you an expert with luxury properties? Are you an expert in helping people with bond loans from the mortgage side? Are you an expert on a particular area, particular neighborhood? Like, what are you an expert in? Because if someone's going to work with you, they want to understand what you are, in fact, an expert in. And if you think you're an expert in everything, I got news for you, you're not. And you got to figure out what it is that you excel in and what you're most comfortable working with, because you're always going to be able to leverage your strengths in that sweet spot as to what your natural fit is. But you need to define that. And again, just one more time, the consumer segment that you're going after can never be everybody. Everybody's too many people. You got to start to chunk that down so you understand specifically what your target market looks like and who that target market is. Because you sell differently to a first-time home buyer than you do to a luxury buyer. Moving forward, cost structure. You want to understand how much financial investment that you have to put into this. Now, one of the fortunate things from a service industry is you're not developing a widget, right? So you don't have hard manufacturing costs like a lot of businesses do. You're service-oriented. Your value is you and the service that you can provide. But it doesn't mean that you don't have any cost. You know, there's cost associated with lead gen. There's cost associated with social media marketing or print marketing. There's costs that you need to budget for. And it can't be a spontaneous thing. Define that budget going into 2025. Break that budget down in detail. Stick to your budget. And most importantly, you have to manage and be accountable to what that budget is. So as an example, if you're going to spend $1,000 per month in lead flow, okay, how many leads, who's the source? How many leads are that or is that? Then you want to be able to track, what's my conversion ratio on it? What's my time frame associated with a conversion rate? Because it's not going to be instantaneous. Some people you'll convert quickly, other people will convert over 6 to 12 months. My point being, if you're not tracking that and you don't understand your individual metrics, you'll never know where you need to improve or where you're struggling at. I've said this before on our show, and please listen to this. You can only manage what you can measure. If you can't measure it, you can't manage it. If you don't track it, you can't measure it. Therefore, you can't manage it, in which case your business plan is terrible. So you really want to make sure that you're drilling on to specific analytics and paying attention to what it is that you're doing. Multiple revenue streams. Let's take a look for a second at our going back to our business pillars for a loan officer. All right, well, what's my projected revenue stream for working with real estate agents? What's my cost basis associated with that? What's my net profit? You know, what are my metrics on that? If I'm going after the builder business, okay, same logic. You know, what's my planned revenue? My book of business, what's my planned revenue? Financial planners, what's my planned revenue? Cost basis, all of that, accountants and so forth. But you want to be able to break it down individually because each have different conversion ratios and potential costs associated with it. As an example, if you're working with a real estate agent and you're pre-approving a home buyer, well, that home buyer may not close on that property for 3 to 6 months, especially in a market with tight inventory. So it goes without saying that you have to have a disciplined system as to how you're going to stay engaged with them, but you got to understand it's a longer timeline. If you're working with a financial planner and interest rates are down and they have a customer that they referred over to you, to do a refinance to drop their interest rate or pull cash out for something they need, that's a shorter timeline. That's going to be something that closes much more quickly than the person that you pre-approved. And you want to be able to manage and understand these metrics. And before you write your business plan, you just want to, you want to understand these components of it, and you want to be able to drill things down in detail. If you need any help in discussing what you're planning on doing or what you want to do, or you need help from a coaching standpoint, please reach out to me. You can reach me at greg@yourmortgageprocess.com, and I'd be more than happy to try to lead you down that path of assistance. As always, I appreciate everyone listening today or watching our video on YouTube, and we look forward to catching up with you next week. Thanks, guys. Thank you for tuning in to this week's edition of Your Mortgage Process, hosted by Greg Wareham, produced by Greg Wareham and Nick Pavese at The Social Rift, and executively produced by The Social Rift. Thank you again for tuning in, and we look forward to catching up with you next week.